Self-control. We're at the end of our fruit of the Spirit, the last in the fruit of the Spirit. So tonight is the last evening. And we're dealing with self-control. Now, in my quiet time this week, I prayed to God directly for some help with self-control. I wanted to know exactly what was self-control so I could explain it to you tonight. And just as God was about to give me the exact answer on self-control, I was just about, then I realized I hadn't checked my emails for a little while. So I just quickly thought I'd check my emails. And when I was in emails, it says I haven't been on Facebook for a while. So I just clicked over to Facebook quickly, and someone had tagged me in a funny compilations of motorbike crashes. So I had to watch that. And that was really funny, and it made me laugh, and I had to share it with my friends. And then while I was on this motorbike page, it had a link to the top three animated movies, and my favourite is Shrek, so I had to make sure that Shrek was on there. So I clicked across, and sure enough, Shrek was there. And then from there, you could take a quiz to see who you were most like in the Shrek movie. So I had to take the quiz because I wanted to know. Then I got really upset because I found out that I was most like Shrek. And then I couldn't remember what I started praying about. I couldn't remember. See, self-control is like that, isn't it? In our prayer time, in our quiet times, in our time in life, self-control is quite difficult for us to do. It's really difficult. And some people appear as committed to self-control as a kamikaze pilot on his 38th mission. You have to think about that for a moment. So we're going to look at self-control tonight. And if you Google self-control, you will get lots of definitions of what self-control is. I can see some of you have just got my joke on the kamikaze pilot. It's clicking through. So what is self-control? Well, if you Google self-control, you will come up with there is thousands and thousands of people who want to tell you about self-control. And most of them want to charge you a lot of money for it and look at it from a self-help perspective. But the definition that I liked the most was from a friend of mine called Stephen Drinkle, and he preached here one night, and he said self-control is, if you want this, then you can't have that. Self-control is, if you want this, then you can't have that. So if you want to lose weight, well, you can't eat rubbish. If you want to save money, then you can't spend it all. If you want to succeed at your exams, then you need to have to study. Don't shoot the messenger, but you'll need to study. If you want to get fit, you have to exercise. If you want a nice lawn, well, you have to mow it. And all this you need to do, you need to develop in your life self-control. And so, as we said, it's the last on our list of the fruit of the Spirit. And can I tell you that during history and the Bible, there is countless examples of men and women who have failed in life with dire consequences because they could not master self-control. Samson, one of the strongest men in the Bible, well, he couldn't control his self-control. And look what happened to him. We had Solomon, who was one of the greatest kings of all time, one of the wisest men, a man who had incredible political influence. But because of the women in his life, he lost self-control. He came back, but at great cost. Moses had to develop self-control. He had anger issues, and it took him to kill a man to realize that he had to bring his self-control into line. Self-control can really hinder your life. Self-control can really hinder your potential. But more importantly, self-control, or a lack of self-control, can really hinder God's purpose for your life. This lack of self-control can really hinder God's purpose in your life. And I tell this story about this child who had anger issues. And his parents, out of frustration, said to him and gave him a bag of nails. And they said, every time you lose your control, son, I want you, every time you get angry, sorry, and you lose self-control, I want you to hammer a nail into the fence. So the young man hammers a nail into the fence. And this goes on for about 3 weeks, and he gets sick of nailing. So he eventually brings his anger into control. And he tells his father, and the father says, that's really good, son, I'm really proud of you. But mate, what I want you to do is every time you now control your anger, I want you to pull a nail out of the fence. So sure enough, every time he controlled his anger, he pulled a nail out of the fence. At the end of another 3 weeks, he said to his father, look, father, there is no nails left in the fence. And there was not. He had done really well. But his father took him to the fence and said, look at the fence. There are now holes in the fence because of your anger when you didn't control yourself. This fence will never ever be the same. It will always have the holes in it because you couldn't control your anger. So at first when we're talking about self-control, we might wonder, why would Paul list it in the fruit of the Spirit? Why is self-control listed as a fruit of the Spirit? But then, you know, that story, and we see all the lives that have come from broken lives that are left in the wake of a lack of self-control, and we start to understand why. And this might be a particularly strong statement, but an uncontrolled life, or a life with no control, is really not a part of being in the Christian life. And that is perhaps why Paul's got it on his list, and it's last. And we read in Galatians 5:22-23, that but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, and faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Solomon, who's one of the wisest men who wrote Proverbs, and I love Solomon, he writes this: like a city whose walls are broken through is a person who lacks self-control. Like a city whose walls are broken through is a person who lacks self-control. We see a straightforward comparison in this verse, don't we? It's a bit desolate and it's a bit bleak, this verse. And it's a bit rich to really understand what he means, but what he's saying is that a person who lacks self-control, well, his defensive walls have been breached. And we might be tempted to say that an uncontrolled life's really not that bad. We might just brush it off. But this verse, well, the parallels give us a really good understanding of the word picture. That just as a wall protects the city, self-control protects a person. So just as the walls protect a city, self-control protects a person. So how do we go about developing self-control? How do we go about developing self-control to protect ourselves? How do we biblically build a wall that allows us to protect what's dear to us? How do we improve our self-control? Because as I look around tonight, there's a lot of younger people in the audience, as we know. Can I tell you that self-control is everything to your walk in the Christian faith? If you cannot control yourself, it is very, very difficult to stay on a true course. Because the reality is, if we're not building a wall, we have no plan. And failing to plan is planning to fail. I'm going to say that again. If we're not building a wall, we have no plan. And failing to plan is planning to fail. So this evening we're going to look at some steps that we can use this week, some practical steps that's going to help us to develop our self-control. And we're probably in a couple of areas going to go PG. Now, when we develop self-control, well, it will bring us feelings of competency, and the results of self-control give us an inner sense of security because we're building our wall. So I love this statement from Vincent Lombardi, and it's hung in my workplace for 20 years on a plaque that I have. And Vincent Lombardi says, well, the difference between a successful person and others is not a lack of strength, not a lack of knowledge, but rather in a lack of will. So the difference between a successful person and others is not a lack of strength, not a lack of knowledge, but rather in a lack of will. Because if we want to develop some self-control, we need to have the willpower to do it. It doesn't matter how much knowledge you have. It doesn't matter how much strength you have. You need willpower to develop self-control. So as we've been speaking, we're probably all starting to get a bit of an idea why self-control is so important and why it's listed as the fruit of the Spirit. So let's have a look at six steps that we can use this week to help us develop our self-control. So step one is to be realistic and honest with yourself. Be realistic and honest with yourself. We read in James 1:14, but each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desires and enticed. Well, a person's temptation is due to the pull of their own inward desires. And they can be enormously attractive, can't they? This means we do things because we like to. I know it's bad for me, but I'm still going to do it. I like it. I want to do it. It's just so good. And good, most sin is enjoyable. Most things that are bad for us are enjoyable. And so enticing. And it's where our human nature takes over. And I'm hoping you can remember this, but after 5 weeks, can we all remember that our human nature Very good. And that's where it takes over. I'd like you to watch this clip, please.
No! It's the food of oppression! I must be strong! Or maybe just a taste. Nine! Oh, so good! I'm big! How could I? Nine!
We do what is good because it's enjoyable. Sometimes we even come up with excuses, don't we? When we do something, we have these excuses. Well, the devil made me do it. Or it's not my fault. It's my parents, the way they raised me. Or it's just the way I am. It's just the way I'm wired. Or I'm weak. Why bother? And this is my all-time favorite. The few mums and dads are here. But mum, everybody's doing it. So all the parents are agreeing. So the first problem we need to do with self-control is we need to admit that there's a problem, and where that self-control might be a problem in our lives. Perhaps you have a problem with food. Perhaps you have a problem with drinking. Perhaps you have a problem with your temper. Perhaps you have a problem with money, sex, television, clothes, a substance abuse problem, possibly making time to pray. Maybe it's staying focused during prayer for you. So step one is to be really honest where we struggle, and to identify that area. And to identify that area is really not that difficult, because the fact of the matter is, I'll almost guarantee we all know the area that we struggle in, don't we? We all know that place that we go. And for some of us, it may be really dark. For some of us, it might be really embarrassing in that area of the life that we struggle. But unless we identify that area for ourselves, how do we know what we want to fix? So step one, it's just to identify that problem that we might have. So step two is, after you know what causes you to stumble, it's just to remove it. After you've discovered what causes you to stumble, it's just to remove it. So after some considerable thought and prayer, hopefully you can establish what causes you these problems. What can you remove from your life? Because even at our strongest, if the temptation is right in front of you, even the strongest will fail. You need to plan your life to take in accordance with what you have identified that may tempt you. Now, Leanne and I have had this talk several times over the last 20 years as we've worked with youth groups. And we've talked to teenagers as you're starting to develop into the dating world. And for example, when you're going into the dating world, that you need to put yourself in positions where you're not going to find yourself in a position where you don't know what to do. And, you know, the classic example of this is the back seat of the car is not the place for you to start thinking about self-control. You need to identify that earlier. You need to plan in advance to avoid situations that you know are going to cause you problems. We read in Ephesians 4:27, don't give the devil a chance. If you're suffering with food issues, maybe you should stop buying those types of foods at the supermarket. If you're struggling with the internet, maybe you need to put some filters in place to stop it. If you're suffering with alcohol, just don't have it in the house, period. If you're struggling with money, don't get that extra credit card. In your notes this evening in section 2, there's some extra space for you. Maybe you'd like to jot down there in note form so your neighbour can't see some things in your life that you may need to remove. It might be food, certain types of food, chocolate. It might be some magazines. It might be some stuff on your computer. It might be a relationship that you're in. Maybe you need to remove that relationship from your life, because sometimes people are the very thing in your life that you need to restrict. So after identifying what the problem is, step two is to remove that from our life. Well, step three is to develop persistence or an unwavering desire to succeed. So we read in Corinthians 9:24-25, and it says, "Do you not know that in a race all runners run, but the only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last. But we do it to get a crown that will last forever. So after you've identified some of the problem areas and you've done your very best to remove them, well, the next step is to be resolute in your desire to succeed in conquering this part of your life. And the problem here is if we don't know what it is that we want to remove, then it's very difficult to be successful. Persistence takes place when we know what we want to do. Because can I tell you that clarity is power. Clarity in your goal will give you power to conquer it. You need to know what it is if you want to achieve it. I've used this example before, but if I come up with a goal and I say, I want to lose 5 kilograms because it sounds like fun, versus I would like to lose 5 kilograms to fit into my wedding dress. Which do you think goal has more power? Which one are we more likely to achieve? So to be persistent, well, we need to find a goal that we can work towards, that even in the toughest times, that we can strive to achieve this, that we can stay strong. Well, step 4 is that we need to move forward, not backwards. We need to move forward, not backwards. Can I tell you that failure is part of life? It's difficult when you're younger to really understand it, but learning how to fail is just as important as learning how to succeed. Because in our life, we will have as many failures as we will have successes. And just because you failed once does not mean that you are defined by that failure. My last relationship failed, so I'm no good at this marriage thing. My child is no good, therefore I've got nothing really to offer as a parent. I can't save money, so why bother trying? I can't deal in my life without substances. I can't. And this is you. If this is what you see yourself, this is what you will become. Looking in your rearview mirror should give you clarity for the future, not an anchor that holds you back. I'll say that again. Looking in your rearview mirror should give you clarity for the future, not an anchor that holds you back. We've all made mistakes. We have all failed. But developing good self-control is about forgiving yourself and moving on better for it, not worse for it. I know people are watching you. I know that people are judging. I know people laugh at your failures. But Jesus is not. Jesus loves you for your successes and your failures irrespective. He loves you unconditionally. Move forwards, not backwards. Forgive yourself for your failures. Step five is that we need to convince ourselves that we can change. Because change is difficult. And if you don't believe it, you won't change. And it's a really important step because the areas that we struggle in the most are going to be the areas where we have the least amount of self-confidence or we really loathe ourselves in those areas. So the places that we loathe ourselves or have low self-confidence is the areas where we struggle. You might be thinking, why should I wait for marriage? Because who would want to marry me anyway? Why do I need to finish that course? Because who would want to employ me anyway? It's pointless finishing that course. It's pointless trying because no one would want to employ me anyway. Why eat better? I'm always going to be overweight. Why read the Bible? Why follow Jesus? Because I'm never going to be good enough for him. Well, this evening, can I give you a really hint that my dad taught me? That's a really good hint. Just grab a little piece of card. It can be a business card or a yellow post-it sticker. And on that post-it or yellow sticker, I want you to write this. And you'll know the area that you struggle with. For example, if you struggle with anxiety, you might write, you put your own name, I am Paul Hicks, and I do not suffer from anxiety. I am confident and strong. Otherwise, you might write things like, I am, and I am good enough to be loved. I am, and I am a princess of the Most High God, the King of Kings, and I deserve a man who sees me this way. I am, and I will lose that weight. I am, and I will be good enough to be loved by an ever-gracious God. I am, and I will be confident enough to say no to something in my life, and I will have self-control in this part of my life. Now, if you put that in a place where only you know what it is. Because if you put it in a really open spot, people will think you're crazy. They won't understand what you're doing. Best place is just under the visor of your car. And you read that 2 or 3, 4 and 5 times a day. I am and I will. Can I tell you that you will start to believe it when you read it enough? Eventually you will believe it and you will start to convince yourself of that change. But before I go any further, can I assure you that God unconditionally loves you? That even in your darkest days, even at your worst, even when you feel like you have failed at this thing called life, He loves you. And He sent His Son for you. And can I tell you that His Son has paid the price for your sin in the court of courts, in the highest court, in full. He's paid your fine in full. Step six is my favourite one. Step six is where we get angry with our feelings. And you might be saying, Paul, what do you mean by getting angry with your feelings? That doesn't make sense. We need to get angry with our feelings. We need to talk back to our feelings. We need to be resolute with our feelings. The feelings, and what I'm talking about is, you know when it's 7:30 at night and you say, I feel like some chocolate. Or, I don't feel like going to work today. I don't feel like studying today. I don't feel like getting out of bed today. I don't feel like going for a walk today. I don't feel like praying. I don't feel like going to church. I don't feel like God is real in my life. Or perhaps it's the opposite. I feel like more food. I feel like a failure. I feel like another drink. I feel like speaking my mind today. I feel that I shouldn't do that, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know, we sound like a moody bunch when we start talking like this, but our mood can determine our actions so much. So it's really, really important that we don't let our moods or our feelings take control of our lives. God doesn't want you to be controlled by the mood that you're in. And we all want a more balanced, we want more consistent moods in our lives, so we need to talk back to our feelings. So what I mean by this, if you feel yourself saying, I don't feel like doing my homework today, you have to talk back and say, I am going to do my homework today. I don't feel like reading my Bible today because it doesn't help. I do feel like reading my Bible today because it brings me such peace. I feel like more food. Well, I don't feel like more food. I feel like a failure. It needs to be changed with I am not a failure. We need to talk to our feelings. We know we read. We need to argue with our feelings and we need to be resolute with our feelings. We read in Titus 2:11-12 that for the grace of God has appeared that offers salvation to all people. It teaches us to say no. It teaches us to say no to ungodliness and worldly passions and to live self-controlled, upright and godly lives in this present age. God gives us the amazing strength and the ability to be able to talk back to our feelings, to bring our moods into a more balanced state. God gives you the power to do what is right. And with God's assistance, you can master your feelings and consequently your moods. So we've been through 6 steps, haven't we, on how we can help to develop more self-control. So step one, we can be more realistic. Sorry, to be realistic and honest with ourselves. And after we've done that, step two is after we know what causes us to stumble, we want to remove it from our lives the best we can. We want to be persistent and have an unwavering desire to succeed with that part of self-control in our lives. We want to be constantly moving forwards and not backwards. We want to forgive ourselves for the failures. We want to convince ourselves that change, that we believe that we can change. We want to believe that we can develop that area of self-control in our lives. And we want to talk back to our feelings and to be resolute with our feelings. You know, we looked at that clip right at the beginning where we talked about the definition of success. That success, according to Vincent Lombardi, well, the difference between a successful person and others is not a lack of strength, not a lack of knowledge, but rather a lack of will. Well, to be successful with self-control does not take physical strength. To be successful with your self-control does not take knowledge, but it takes will. It takes the ability to be able to say no in your life. And if you struggle with the will, I need to tell you tonight that you're not on your own. We read in Philippians 2, "Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose." You know, as you go further and further into your life and you immerse yourself more into Christ, well, the gift of the fruit of the Spirit of self-control will become more apparent. We read in 2 Timothy 1:7, "For the Spirit God gave us does not make us timid, but it gives us power, love, and self-control." For the Spirit God gave us does not make us timid, but gives us power, love, and self-control. You know, this evening we've been talking about self-control. Can I tell you this stuff, this self-control, it's hard. It's really difficult. If self-control was easy, everybody would have it. And it might not necessarily be a fruit of the Spirit because it would just be easy. Self-control is blinking hard. And it takes a lot of self-control to get better and better and better. But you don't need to do it on your own because God is there with you 24/7 to help you overcome what ails you. You know, this evening as we've been talking about it, what areas of your life are you finding a struggle in? Is it the internet? Is it money? Is it power? Is it food? Is it exercise? Is it losing weight? Is it lust? Is it the computer? There's so many different things these days that we have to deal with our self-control. And the only way you can deal with it is to be resolute with your feelings and to say no. But I do have a secret for you tonight. That the secret of self-control is Christ's control. The secret of self-control is Christ's control. If you haven't done this, you need to ask God into your life to ask him to help you to take control of your life. Then as the temptations of life come, particularly the ones that you struggle with, he is with you. And as I've said before, and I'll say it again, that with Jesus, everything can change. That with Jesus, everything can change. Self-control is a really difficult thing as you're growing into the next stages of your life. I really challenge you and encourage you to really develop your self-control because it will hold you instead in so many areas of your life as you go through it. Will you join me in prayer tonight as the musicians come back up on the stage? Dear Heavenly Father, we come to you in prayer tonight and we ask for help and guidance and comfort and strength as we deal with self-control in our area, in our life. We all have those areas in our life that we particularly struggle with, that we stumble, that we have failed in, and the parts of the life that we like and we know it shouldn't be part of our lives. We come to you in prayer tonight for help, and as we go through the school week, that you will help us to deal with those parts of our life which are in the dark places, that we need help, we need self-control to deal with it. We thank you for the wonderful time we've had in the fruit of the Spirit, and we pray that we can implement this in this year and we can continue to thrive in your name in 2017, not just survive. We pray these things in all your name. Amen.